don't need no education.
Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Education Nation. Last week, we started a conversation on excessive standardized testing in our public schools. And boy, is there a lot of ground to cover on this subject. From students to teachers to parents, there is a movement and an impassioned plea to stop this nonsense. I have my co-host Pete Hegseth here this morning. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning. Can I just stop and say how enjoyable it is to spend Saturday mornings with you?
I agree.
The banks of the St. Croix River.
Absolutely.
Here at KLBB.
Beautiful views from
drinking KLBB. Great coffee. I mean, you can't beat it.
Exactly.
And then we get to talk about education, and I get to listen to an expert like you, and so does everybody else.
Yes.
So I am grateful. My name is Pete Hegseth. I'm just here warming a seat next to Rebecca Hagstrom, who in her day job is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, which if you have not checked it out in White Bear Lake, I'm biased because I'm the parent of two young boys that are there, but it's a fantastic school, and you really are an accidental headmaster in a sense, and that you were a parent of kids in public schools and didn't feel like they were being enriched the way you wanted to,
exactly.
And so you did what very few people do, which is, hey, I'm going to start a school, which over a decade later is really flourishing and doing incredible things. So I really want to make sure the audience understands who Rebecca is and what her passion is and what really brought her to the knowledge of this, because you didn't have that background necessarily. You've learned it and forged it, and really no one knows it better. So last week we had an opportunity to talk about standardized testing, really get a sense of the history, heard from Janae, a parent who really gave us a powerful perspective of how her kids had been affected by lack of teaching because of testing and over-testing, and it really started that conversation, which we're going to continue here this morning. It's become an overkill in our schools, and kids are suffering because of it. We did get into the history last week, and today we're going to talk about some of the implementation and costs of standardized testing in our schools. What is that implementation looking like, and what are some of the cost considerations, Rebecca?
Okay. Well, of course, one of the main costs is the lack of teaching that then can take place in the schools, because the kids are having to spend so much time preparing for the tests, and therefore the teachers are having to spend so much time preparing them for the tests. So this art of teaching is beginning to get lost. Teachers are not able to use their creativity as much. They're not able to use their own ideas because it's being dictated to them what they teach and how they teach it. So they're becoming like technicians, which is really sad. And on the heels of that is sort of a secondary issue that is in a sense primary. And that is that because so much of this testing and curriculum is being done through the internet or done through iPads or what have you, the financial cost to districts across the nation is exorbitant. And this doesn't include even the cost of the tests themselves. You know, these testing companies have poured hundreds of millions of dollars into development of the tests, especially the two that were developed for Common Core, the PARC test and the Smarter Balance test.
Okay, and we're going to talk a little bit more about Common Core in future episodes.
Yep, exactly. We are. But those two tests have been recently developed, and they're already being implemented, even though they've been untested themselves. And the cost of that is phenomenal, you know, from a pure cost standpoint. And so we're looking at these districts who we know are stretched financially, right? We hear about not having the class sizes we want. We hear that teachers are getting cut because they don't have the money. And yet we pour hundreds of millions of dollars into the cost of technology and internet, adding internet space and that kind of thing, so that we can run all of these technology-based curriculums and tests.
The next technology-based test.
Exactly.
All of life in our own personal lives, but certainly in public education where there's limited funds, is about trade-offs, cost trade-offs. I mean, time is money and a trade-off. What you spend your time on, how many days, how many hours on certain things, trade-off. You're giving something else up, which we heard from Janae last week where she talked about entire subject matter, algebra being skipped in third and fifth grade or whatever grade that it was in order to teach to a test. And then you've got the actual cost, the financial cost, the investment in limited dollars of these districts. You know, teachers aren't, you know, paid what we would want them to be, all these different things. Yet we're spending more and more money engineering tests that are difficult for young kids to take.
And that's a whole nother issue. And we kind of covered that a little bit in the last segment. See, I wanted to read to you the exasperation of a single teacher.
It comes off the page.
It does. It comes off the page. And her frustration about the sheer cost of all of these tests. And this teacher writes, if so many of our schools... Actually, I just realized, Pete, that when we talked about this earlier, you wanted to talk about this teacher, didn't you?
I'm sorry. No. You can read just as well as I can.
I stole your thunder.
No, you don't. You're not capable of you always steal my thunder every Saturday morning, but that's okay. No, this quote was found in the Washington Post.
Yes.
And it was a teacher who was so frustrated with exactly what you're talking about and the cost. So I'm going to read the quote and point out every spot where it's about money.
Yes.
Said, if so many of our schools are seen as failing, yet so many of our students are using a test company's test prep materials, which cost money, which are being reported to the state via a test company's computerized program, which costs money, and then taking the test company's multitude of standardized tests cost money, which are then assessed by the test company's evaluators, who somebody's got to pay, and then remediation is done with students using, again, the test company's intervention materials, which the school gets to pay for, and all the, and then they're taking the same test company's own graduation test, which costs money, and the test company has prepared the K-12 materials for in the first place. Then, just exactly who or what is really failing that child? So if that child is failing, fear not, because dropouts can later take a GED, which costs money, administered by the same testing company.
Wow.
You can start to see the self... We in the military, we would call it a self-licking ice cream cone. but it's a it's a closed loop of cost, which always leads back to more testing or remedial action, all relying on the company and the technology that administers.
And, might I add, this is all our hard... work or our hard-working tax dollars
or hard-earned,
there we go, that's what I'm looking for, hard-earned tax dollars that are paying for all of this. And so these, you know, we want to think that these people all have the best interests of the students in mind, and let's give them the benefit of the doubt. If we give them the benefit of the doubt, it's still ridiculously, insanely costly, and it's not doing the job for the kids. But if we even take a slightly negative view, we can look at this and wonder, have some people figured out a great way to game the system and make a lot of money in the process?
You have an interesting point here. I mean, everyone's got a lobby or a lobbyist. What do you see behind a little bit of this?
Well, I'm going to tell you that I think about things like, when I was in Manhattan a couple years ago, I saw Pearson, one of the biggest curriculum companies in the entire world. Where do they have their building? A big, beautiful building in some of the most expensive real estate in all of the nation, Manhattan. Right across the street, College Board, SAT. Now David Coleman, who wrote the Common Core State Standards along with a group, but he was the primary author, is the head of College Board. They're right across the street from each other. Do you think there's any reason to suspect why Pearson is one of the biggest curriculum companies that is driving the Common Core standards and all the testing and all the prepping? I'm sorry. It's hard not to start to be a little bit concerned.
No, it is. I've heard of crony capitalism or crony politics. You're saying there's a little bit of crony education going on here.
I believe there is. Sure. This is a big concern for me. I really do believe that we are seeing that these curriculum companies have figured out a great way to continue to make a lot of money. If you keep changing the curriculum, you keep adding more testing, and then you have to prep for that testing, you can keep putting out materials after materials after materials that every district then is helpless because they've been told, you have to give your kids these tests.
It's such a great point. And every one of those tests is based on new cutting-edge technology, quote-unquote, that every student or school wants because everyone wants to feel like they're ahead of the curve or with the curve on technology.
Right.
But technology doesn't teach you how to think. It doesn't teach you logic or grammar or rhetoric or the key core principles of learning.
Exactly.
That's the problem.
Pete, that is just such an important point that's getting lost in all of this. You know, in our effort to have standards, we are not teaching the kids the most important thing, and that is how to think.
Yeah.
And we can't do that through technology. Technology teaches kids to be button pushers.
Sure.
It teaches them to be compliant. It doesn't teach them to think outside of the box.
If you want button pushers who are compliant, send them to the military. The Army will take care of basic training.
There we go.
All right. We've got to take a really quick break, but we're going to be back to talk about the tests themselves, which you've got some interesting information about, as well as the viability of those results.
Mm-hmm.
Stick around.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need no thought control. I'm seeing 1041 on your Club 1220 KLBB radio dial. We're grateful that you're joining both myself, Pete Hegseth, and Rebecca Hagstrom for Education Nation, as we do every single Saturday morning. In our first segment, we talked about the cost of standardized testing. As we said, we're going to tackle these issues of education every Saturday. We hope you make this show your home. But Rebecca, we talked about the cost and whether it's worth it. Are these tests, however, even with all the money we're spending, maybe they're good tests. Are they are they producing the kind of results we want from all that spending?
Well, unfortunately, I cannot say yes to that. I'd like to be able to, but all one needs to do is Google standardized testing online, and you will be amazed at the stories all across the country of the problems with the reliability of these tests. And some of this is due to technology, because like I said in the earlier segment, they are so driven by technology, and districts, even in the best of districts in terms of the costs or the finances, they have trouble having enough internet space and that type of thing. And these tests are driven, especially the Common Core and the PARC, or the PARC and the Smarter Balance with Common Core, are driven by the internet. And so, and I believe Minnesota State tests were also done through the internet last year. And many listeners might remember reading in the newspaper that the results were completely unreliable.
Does that mean we have Al Gore to blame for all of this?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if we can do that, but that might be a big jump.
That's a jump. Sorry. I apologize. Delete that from the transcript.
But that said, unfortunately, things like, you know, the internet will time out. Scoring isn't correct because the scoring is incorrect. It's so frustrating to these kids that sometimes they might just break down in the middle of it and then they miss a bunch of questions. So how can you really trust the results that
you're
getting?
And we heard from a parent last week and who, after the segment was done, told us that in some of these teachers can't even intervene with the technology, meaning a second or third grader who doesn't fully understand it, they really can't stand over their shoulder and say, no, move the mouse here, make a correction. They're kind of on their own technological island.
Yes. Not only that, but if a child vomits on a test, they have to seal it up and send it in. They cannot keep that test. So that leads to a whole nother host of questions that we're going to cover in the next segment.
I wasn't ready for that.
It's
Saturday morning, remember.
But the reality of the concerns with reliability is very significant. And like I say, we had unreliability issues with our state testing last year, and we are seeing this across the nation. Let's say, though, that we even could have the most reliable internet.
Okay. Yeah. Given.
The most reliable scoring. Everything's working perfectly.
Yep. Bill Gates is personally in your school making sure it works.
Yes, which he is the money behind the Common Core State Standards. That said, let's say all that's true. We still can't trust the reliability of these tests because the PARC and Smarter Balance tests were only developed in the last couple of years. And I actually have quotes from one of the developers saying, we don't quite know how we're going to do this online on technology, but we're going to figure that out in time because we have to have them rolled out by, you know, this date. And so a lot of these tests were rolled out in 15. So last year was the first year that most of our states gave the Common Core tests. And like I said, there's two tests, PARC and Smarter Balance. They are not tested. They are, I would not put any credence on those results, and especially the way they are given, requiring all the technological knowledge on the part of the student.
Really interesting. You know, Nancy Pelosi famously said we need to pass Obamacare so we can find out what's in it.
Yes, that's what this is like.
This is almost what they're saying, that
yes.
we need to administer these tests so we can find out if they work.
Yes.
The problem is the rest of us have kids in school.
Right. These are real children.
They're real children, not guinea pigs.
No.
And if we don't know whether these tests work the way we want, man, that doesn't rub me the
yeah.
right way.
You know, I wanted to read a quote from a guy named Alfie Cohn, actually, C-O-H-N, and he hosts a blog, and you can find him online. He's got a lot of great conversation going on education in general.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the comments that he made is that he says, once you realize that the tests are unreliable indicators of quality, then what possible reason would there be to subject kids to those mind-numbing, spirit-killing, regimented instructional programs that were designed principally to raise test scores?
It's a great question. I mean, I know, especially, we all want kids that can read and write and know the basics, but when the test is overwhelming that capability and becoming more important almost than those skills, and then you're narrowing the
right.
test, what you're testing just to get to teach to the test,
mm-hmm.
You're not providing any space
for actual teaching
and learning.
Yes, and you know our guest that we had on last week, Pete, she mentioned that after the segment was over, actually, that she had a friend that had been teaching in that district who then went and taught at a private school,
mm-hmm.
and she was so stunned at the difference in the ability that she had to teach in that private school, which is exactly how it is for us at Liberty. Our teachers have so much opportunity to take our lesson plans, take our scope and sequence and develop their own lesson plans. And they do amazing things. They can be creative. They can develop plans that incorporate hands-on types of learning and that type of thing.
And by the way, if you're a new listener to this program, go online to KLBB to look at the podcasts of previous episodes, because the first couple of episodes lay out what Rebecca's talking about, how Liberty Classical Academy goes through deliberate stages of learning
right.
for kids at every age on all those subjects that have nothing to do with standardized testing and everything to
right.
do with learning.
Right.
But the great thing about Liberty, and it was what attracted my wife and I to the school, was in part, is that the tests you guys have on the important tests,
mm-hmm.
kids are scoring fantastically.
Yes. And actually, we only give one set of standardized tests per year. One.
Hmm.
And that is in the spring. That's what I did way back when I was in school.
I remember doing tests in school. Tests are important. Again,
and, you know, do we think they're important? Of course we do. But they're one piece of the puzzle. They are not the score that determines their future path. And we don't teach to those tests. We do our program. We do our curriculum the way we would normally do it. And then we give the standardized tests. And yet, in spite of the fact that we're not teaching to the test, our kids are scoring extraordinarily well. Extraordinarily well, both in the K-8 level and then also in the high school with their ACTs and SATs.
With your ACTs and SATs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll
top 13% of the nation, actually.
Wow,
on our,
that's incredible.
Yeah.
And having
yeah.
been to what you do where they have to defend a thesis, I mean, the level of intelligence that's required to both write
right.
and articulate what is done at Liberty Classical Academy
right.
is very, very, very impressive.
We're not dependent on testing, the preparation for the testing, the technology. We're teaching these kids how to think.
Absolutely.
And it is actually working. It's amazing.
I'd say that's not a bad way to do it.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, we've got one more second. We're going to talk about what we can assume, how you implement a system correctly. We've got a lot more on this actual subject. Where are we headed with standardized testing? Stick around. We'll be right back.
We don't need no education.
Education Nation, back for the final segment. We just teased talking about where is this all headed. Rebecca, where is all this standardized testing headed?
Well, unfortunately, Pete, it actually gets worse. We're taking
I'm
all...
bummed out.
I know. It just keeps getting worse as the
my head
segment
is on the
progresses.
Desk.
But we're taking, unfortunately, and I'm talking nationwide here, we're taking all of these tests. And what are we doing with the results? We're collecting information. And now it's being taken a step further to formative assessments. So we're not just doing the single one-week high-stakes testing. Now we're seeing more and more of the formative assessments.
I do not know what formative assessments means. You're going to have to tell me what that means. But before we do that, I'm going to toss to a... We've got some audio from a fourth grader that I think powerfully sets up what you're about to talk to. Take a listen to a fourth grader here.
This testing looks at me as a number. One test defines me as either a failure or a success through a numbered rubric. One test at the end of the year that the teacher or myself will not even see the grade until after the school year is already over. I do not feel that all this FSA testing is accurate to tell how successful I am. It doesn't take an account of all my knowledge and abilities, just a small percentage.
Well played, fourth grader from Ohio.
Absolutely.
Really powerful to hear that. Apparently, she was in front of her school board. Good for her.
And she got a huge round of applause at the end.
Well, sometimes it's the smallest voices speaking truth.
Yes.
But
out
what
of
is
the
she
mouth of babes.
Yeah, that's right. Tell me what is she referring to, formative assessments? What does that mean?
Well, you know, in that particular clip, she is talking about the constant testing and how it is she's having to become like a number. And she's getting this single score, and that is going to drive her future. And she knows that.
And she doesn't get to see it.
Right.
Yeah.
And one of the things that she says in that whole clip, she says, and why do I have to sign a statement saying that I will not tell my parents what is on this test?
Does that happen?
Yes.
I did not know that.
Shocking, isn't it?
Interesting. Do they feel like parents will collaborate amongst each other and tell each other the questions on the test?
Good question. I don't know.
I'm telling my kids to tell me what's on the test.
Yeah, absolutely. What good parent wouldn't? And I think most parents aren't even realizing that their kids are being told this. But anyway, so as far as formative assessments, then, what they're doing is they're taking this idea of being able to test kids, especially, you know, it tends to be computer driven, like I said, and they're saying, if we're going to prep these kids for this test, well, we should make some curriculum that they can do online to prep them for the test. And so the formative assessments are assessments that are happening. They're a little shorter, but they're still standardized, and they're happening periodically, regularly throughout the year, because they are forming then, right? They're forming the knowledge supposedly in the child and preparing them then
for
the
actual
test.
So they're mini tests that happen throughout the year that lead to the big test?
Right. And I want to tell you that
these are outside of quizzes and coursework inside the courses they may have?
Well, it is the course. It becomes the course.
It becomes the entire course.
It becomes the course.
Like the teacher doesn't give the snap quiz that I used to get on Thursdays on a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. It's replaced by the formative assessments that
Which
happen.
Is why teachers are saying they can't teach anymore because all they're doing is preparing for the
test. I hated those quizzes too, by the way.
But they taught you, didn't they?
They did.
But what was I going to say? I had a thought that I was going to say related to that formative
I think
assessment.
When you talk about they're numbers and they're going all the way through with these tests day after day after day, and they're treated like they start to feel like cogs in a wheel. You get fourth graders realizing that they're lab rats, talking about it, and that's, I think, what that clip is. Mm-hmm. But you've mentioned to me before about all the data that's collected from this as they talk about it, as they do these tests.
Right.
These are digitized. They're going somewhere. Mm-hmm. These kids are taking all these tests that are driving the curriculum. They're driving what they learn, how much they learn or don't learn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's happening with all the data that's being
collected? So the data is being collected, actually, as I said earlier. And the reason why is because the idea is we want to make all of our curriculum better and more appropriate to individual students. There was a report that was written back only in 2013. So this is pretty recent. And it was put out by the U.S. Department of Education Office of Educational Technology. And it was a draft report called Promoting Grit, Tenacity, and Perseverance. And they are looking
Sounds
good. Yeah, it does sound good, doesn't it? Except that, again, they're not cogs in a wheel.
Yeah.
They're not robots. They're not rats in mazes. And the way they are suggesting going about this is through the use of technology, and especially biofeedback mechanisms like cameras, like skin sensors that are worn around the wrist, chair sensors.
No.
That would, yes, posture. Uh-huh, to look at the posture. And I'm
skin
not kidding
skin sensors
you.
And chair sensors?
Yes, yes.
Is this Star Trek?
This is, I know. And this is in the U.S. Department of Education, Office of Educational Technology, draft report promoting grit, tenacity, perseverance, dated 2013. And here's the thing. This was research that was admittedly, on their part, new research that needed further research. They actually even admit in that report that this could actually be detrimental to children. And yet, a mere 2.5 years later, what are we seeing? The technology has taken over the educational realm. We now have even schools. There's a group called the Alt School. It was actually developed by a guy from, was it Google or Microsoft or I can't remember where.
Ones.
Yeah, actually, it might have been the Gates Foundation, where they're actually practicing using these things in the classrooms. They're using cameras and technology, and they're saying we're going to, you know, kind of measure every lick of the mouth. And I mean, just, you know, I'm going to read you a quote in a little bit here, but they're basically trying to measure body language.
Sure.
And that feedback then gets collected into massive amounts of data. We know that Google has the ability to do this. And then it's all being measured. And the whole idea is to try to have things be more personalized when really it's becoming less personal.
It's becoming
and
less
more
personalized.
Mechanized.
It's such a great, you know, if you're going to use technology to promote grit, tenacity, and perseverance, I don't know. Does that just mean more ferocious tweeters in the future? I'm just a gritty tweeter. I don't back down from threats.
I don't know
how that translates in a meaningful way. Again, good intentions. Overwhelming technology.
Yes.
Hey, tenacity and grit and perseverance mm-hmm, sound great, mm-hmm. but I used to find that on the athletic field or through performance in the classroom.
Correct.
Or through, you know, dealing with tough situations interpersonally with people, not cameras and sensors.
Correct.
And chairs and data. You've got an interesting quote, though, mm-hmm. I don't know, mm-hmm. about oceans of data.
Yes.
That I think really brings this to life.
Yes, and this actually comes from Pearson. We talked about Pearson in the earlier part of the show. And they did a report called Ocean of Digital Data to Reshape Education. And inside this is a comment that they make. What does this look like to practice, they say? Every keystroke, mouse click, and move of the cursor that a student makes would flow into the digital ocean along a stream of contextual information generated by sensors built into the devices and software the students are using. E-books, for example, might track not only how many pages a student reads, but how much time he or she spends on each page, which word definitions are looked up, when text is highlighted, the difficulty of the reading material in a given text.
Can I stop you for a second? These are this just reads to me like highfalutin elite bureaucrats who want to justify their own existence and feel good about what
they're
doing.
Well, I remember, where did I say the money's coming from? This is Pearson. And it gets worse. Where the book is being read and with whom the student is electronically discussing it. Is that not an invasion of a student's privacy or what?
And again, I just don't know where it goes back to them learning better. I mean, in any profession, you can bow at the altar of metrics, and metrics can become the obsession as opposed to really teaching.
And that's
you what
what's
they
happening.
Want
it's so data driven that these kids truly are like rats in mazes. And it, you know, it kind of harkens back to B.F. Skinner, you know, the whole behavioral piece, right? Mm-hmm. It has its place, but the whole point of this type of learning is to be very mechanistic.
Yeah.
And the poor teachers do not have the opportunity to be creative.
And bureaucracy doesn't breed creativity, especially when it emanates from Washington and elsewhere, as we've talked about. We could talk about this for hours and hours.
We sure could.
We're going to have opportunities to talk even more about it. We've got a pretty fascinating topic coming up next Saturday. What are we going to be talking about?
We are going to be talking about Common Core. I know that this eye-opening experience of talking about standardized testing has been interesting, and it kind of leads us right into the next topic of Common Core.
Common Core is a huge topic you're not going to want to miss next Saturday morning with the headmaster, Rebecca Hagstrom, from Liberty Classical Academy. Check it out, libertyclassicalacademy.org.
And thank you, Pete.
Thank you.